Mahabharata, Chapter 69. Justadumna encounters Drona. Beholding Bhima's son killed and laying like a hill on the battlefield, the Pandavas shed tears of grief. To everyone's amazement, however, Krishna uttered loud war cries and laughed. Dancing on the terrace of Arjuna's chariot, he clapped his arms in happiness. He embraced Arjuna with tears in his eyes. Arjuna looked at him with surprise. O Madhusudan, why are you showing delight at such a time? Our troops are crying in sorrow. We also are grief-stricken to see Hidimbi's son slain. O all-knowing one, tell me truly why you have lost your mind. I consider your fickleness to be as incredible as the ocean drying up, or Mount Meru walking. With his hand on his friend's shoulder, Krishna replied, O Dhananjaya, I feel an overwhelming happiness. Now that Karna has discharged his Shakti weapon, you may consider him dead. No person could have confronted him in battle if, like Kartikeya himself, he stood with the Shakti in hand. By good fortune he has been deprived of his natural armor, and now of the dart that he received in exchange for that invulnerable coat of mail. He is now like an infuriated, venomous serpent, stupefied by incantations, or like a fire with quenched flames. Krishna told Arjuna that ever since he had heard that Karna had received the Shakti weapon, he had been in anxiety. He knew the weapon's terrible power. Even Arjuna would have been unable to check it. Now it had been spent. Karna could not use it again. Arjuna looked at Ghatotkacha. The Shakti must surely be something extraordinary, if it had brought down that mighty Rakshasa. Why then had Karna not used it against him earlier? Seeing Arjuna's mystified expression and understanding his mind, Krishna said, Each day Dhritarashtra's sons would counsel Karna to use his Shakti and slay you, O Partha, and he would come out firmly resolved to do so. It was I who confounded his attempts. Keeping you at other parts of the battle, I gave him little chance to release the dart. He was always awaiting the chance. It would not have been long until he encountered you in a single combat. O Partha, now you need have no fear of that encounter. Arjuna realized that it must have been more than just Krishna's tactical maneuvers that had saved him. Karna had surely had opportunities to hurl the weapon. His intelligence and memory must have been confounded by the indwelling supersoul. The Pandava looked with wonder at Krishna. If he desired one's protection, then how could he be killed? And if he wished for someone's death, then who could protect him? Yudhisthira was sorrowful to witness Ghatotkacha's death. He sat down on the terrace of his chariot and wept. Bhima, his own heart rent with grief, tried to comfort Yudhisthira. Krishna went over to Yudhisthira and said, O son of Kunti, do not give way to grief at such a critical time. In this dread hour of night, our roaring foes are cheering and rushing at us again. Seeing you dispirited, our own men will lose heart for the fight. Yudhisthira wiped his eyes with his hands. You always see the excellent path of duty, O Keshava. We must surely remain in battle, despite reverses. But remembering the many services and kindnesses Bhima's son rendered us, my heart aches. That mighty armed hero who was devoted to us, and he has laid down his life in our service. The affection I bore for him was no less than the affection I feel for Sahadev. The Suta son slew him before our eyes. The evil-minded Karna was also instrumental in Abhimanyu's death. As he spoke to Krishna, Yudhisthira looked out into the night. The battle still raged all around the fallen Ghatotkacha. Karna's illuminated standard could be seen moving among the Pandava forces, and with fire-tipped arrows speeding away from him in all directions. Yudhisthira's face set into firm lines. He got up to his feet and took hold of his bow, the hand-carved horn studded with glowing gems. The Pandava king called out to Krishna as he moved off. Karna and Drona are destroying our army like a pair of infuriated elephants destroying a forest of reeds. O Keshava, I think the time has come for them to die. I will myself advance against Karna. I cannot bear to see his prowess any longer. It seems Arjuna does not wish to kill him, so I will do it myself. After ordering Bhima to engage with Drona and his supporters, Yudhisthira instructed his charioteer to take him toward Karna. As he left, blowing his conch and twanging his bow, Krishna said to Arjuna, "Lo, under the influence of anger, your esteemed elder brother is advancing against Karna. It is not right that you should allow him to engage in a fight with the Suta, whose death you have sworn to accomplish." Arjuna told Krishna to urge his horses on and to quickly follow Yudhisthira. But just at that moment, they saw Vedavyas appear on the battlefield near Yudhisthira, who stopped his chariot next to the sage and got down to offer obeisances. Vyasadeva touched his head in blessing and said, "O foremost of the Bharatas, it is fortunate that Arjuna still lives, although he encountered Karna several times in battle. The Shakti with which Karna slew Ghatotchaka was meant for Arjuna, and only by good fortune did he not use it on him. If a serious duel had taken place between Karna and Arjuna, he would surely have employed the Shakti. A great calamity would then have overtaken you. Ghatotchaka has saved you from that today. The Rakshasa's death was ordained by destiny. Do not give way to wrath or sorrow. All beings in this world must die." Pacifying Yudhisthira, the sage told him that the war was almost over. "On the fifth day from now, the earth will come under your sway. Meditate on virtue. Set your mind on forbearance, charity, truth, and asceticism. O son of Kunti, victory always follows righteousness." After comforting Yudhisthira, the sage vanished. The Pandava king, his anger abated, then called for Justadumna and said, "The time for which you were born has now come. Go and check the mighty Drona in battle. For this express purpose did you spring from fire, armed with a bow and sword, and encased in shining mail. Attack Drona at once. Do not fear. Let Sikandi, the twins, your father Drupada, Virata, Satyaki, and all the Panchalas and Kekayas go with you. Throw down the preceptor and end this ghastly war." Arjuna came up to Yudhisthira, who said, "O Dhananjaya, I see now that you have been saved from disaster. It is Krishna alone who is our protector. You should now exert yourself to destroy Karna. Justadumna is advancing against the preceptor. Only four or five Akshahinis remain on the field. This war cannot last much longer." The two brothers looked around the field. It was just past midnight, and the troops were tired. Some of them had lain down to sleep wherever they had been fighting, unable to continue any longer. Others fought on, blinded by sleep and swinging out wildly with their weapons. Warriors were slain while almost unconscious from fatigue, not even feeling the blows which ended their lives. Seeing the soldiers' condition, Arjuna rode out into the midst and called out, "You men are all oppressed by drowsiness. If you like, you may desist from the fight. Lay down your weapons and your bodies, and when the sun arises, we may resume the battle." Praising Arjuna for his compassion, the troops stopped fighting and rested. The entire battlefield gradually became silent as the men lay down to sleep on the ground or on the backs of their slumbering elephants and horses. Others lay on the terraces of their cars, their bows and swords lying next to them. Stilled by sleep, the powerful warriors and their animals lay with the many ornaments gleaming in the moonlight. The field appeared beautiful, like the work of a skilled artist. Gradually, the sky glowed red, and the sun rose from the eastern hills. As the sun illuminated the field, the troops stirred and again rose for battle. The two sides were still intermingled in the positions where they had last fought. Stretching their bodies and rubbing their eyes, they bowed toward the east and offered prayers to the sun god. Then, mounting their chariots and taking up their weapons, they regrouped into their respective divisions and waited for the order to recommence the fight. Duryodhan had not been happy with the decision to rest for the night, but the other Kuru chiefs had disagreed with him. He had wanted to seize the advantage gained by Ghatotchka's death. The huge Rakshasa had killed thousands of warriors as he fell, evening the odds between the two armies. Duryodhan was infuriated that the Kauravas had not been able to gain the upper hand when they had the chance. Going to Drona, he said harshly, "You should have shown no quarter to our weakened enemy. You should not have permitted our troops to follow Arjuna's order. Again and again you have spared the Pandavas. This is my own ill luck." Drona looked angrily at the prince. "Here I am, still clad in armor and striving to kill your enemies, and I will do whatever can be done by the might of one's arms. Still, I do not see that we will defeat the Pandavas, especially Arjuna. If he comes at us in a wrathful mood, we will all be swiftly dispatched to Yamaraja's mansion. How is it that you fail to understand this truth, O king, when you have seen it so many times with your own eyes?" Enraged to hear Drona praising Arjuna again, Duryodhan replied, barely able to control his voice, "O teacher, today, assisted by Dushasan, Karna, and my uncle Shakuni, I will slay Arjuna in battle." Drona laughed. "May good befall you, O Bharata. Your words befit a fool. What presumptuous Kshatriya would venture to fight with Arjuna, who stands with Krishna by his side and the Gandiva in his hand? Has any man ever returned safely after challenging Arjuna? Surely you have no intelligence. Suspicious of everyone, you are cruel and rebuke even those who work for your cause. Go and fight, then, and prove your boastful words in battle. You have declared many times that you will crush the Pandavas. Today we will see you prove your claim. Take your uncle, who prefers to fight with dice, and the vain Karna, and stand before Arjuna and his brothers. There they are, waiting for you. Go and do what should be done by a brave Kshatriya. You have enjoyed this life to the full. By offering sacrifices and giving charity, you have no debts. There is nothing to stop you. Go and fight without fear." Drona turned away. Nothing gave him greater pain than fighting for this arrogant prince. What sinful acts had he performed in previous lives that he was now compelled to side with Duryodhan against the Pandavas? Riding into the remaining Kauravas, Drona gave the order to fight. The warriors cheered, blew in their conches, and beat their drums. Then they moved off in a body toward the Pandavas, determined to fight to the death. On that 15th morning, Drona fought with Drupada and Virata. The two monarchs stood at the head of the Panchala and Chedi armies. Disregarding them both, Drona began slaughtering their troops. He quickly caused a terrible destruction among the warriors, annihilating 5,000 chariot warriors in less than half an hour. The Pandavas looked at Drona as if he were a fire. Whichever way he directed his weapons, he routed the Pandava army. No one could approach him as he let go his flaming arrows. A group of three Panchala princes, sons of Justadumna and Sikandi, valiantly charged at Drona. They struck him with hundreds of fierce shafts, but he did not waver. Licking his lips, Drona cut down all three princes at once with razor-headed arrows, and they fell headlong into the earth. Drupada and Virata charged at Drona from both sides. They afflicted him with long shafts that made him rock on the terrace of his chariot. Drupada hurled 10 lances in swift succession, followed by 10 steel shafts tipped with fire. Drona cut down all the missiles and struck Drupada on the chest with 3 arrows. Drupada angrily threw a dart, decked with gold and gems, at his foe, but Drona cut it to pieces with his shafts. Deciding to slay his opponents, who themselves had killed so many of the Kauravas, Drona took a couple of crescent-headed arrows forged entirely of steel. Uttering mantras, he released the arrows. Drupada and Virata's heads were severed. As the two old kings dropped lifeless from their chariots, Drona returned to slaughtering their armies. Justadumna, witnessing the deaths of both his sons and his father, screamed out to the troops, "Attack Drona! May any man who turns away from Drona today lose the merits of all his pious acts." Cheered by Drona's killing of the two Pandava generals, Duryodhan came to his assistance with Karna and Shakuni. Duryodhan's remaining brothers also surrounded Drona to protect him from attack. The Kaurava warriors knew that Drishtadyumna would now try his utmost to fulfill the prophecy that said he would kill Drona. In the meantime, Bhima became senseless with rage upon seeing Drona destroying the Pandava forces. He came up to Drishtadyumna and spoke harshly. What man, regarding himself a Kshatriya, would stand by and watch his sons and father being slain? Having uttered a terrible oath in the assembly of kings, why do you not act upon it? There stands your sworn enemy, like a sacred fire with arrows and darts for its fuel, and the bodies of men for its libations. If you will not slay him, then I will do it myself. Stand aside. I will dispatch this old Brahmin to Yamaraj's abode at once. Bhima broke away from Drishtadyumna and rushed into the Kaurava's midst. He released torrents of shafts that swept away the fighters opposing him. Drishtadyumna, chastened by the rebuke, followed him, trying to fight his way through to Drona, who was now surrounded by a large number of Kauravas. The Pandava forces came up behind him, and the two armies merged in a frenzied melee. As the two armies clashed, the sky was screened with dust, and everyone thought that night had set again in. The warriors climbed over dead bodies to reach their foes, swinging their swords and thrusting forward with sharp-tipped spears. Chariots could make no progress. Horses reared, unable to move in any direction. Men screamed in pain, then fell, dying, calling out to their loved ones. Many brave warriors lay mortally wounded and filled with joy, awaiting their ascent to the celestial regions. Arjuna, looking for his chance to confront Karna, encountered Drona first. As Bhima and Drishtadyumna beat a path through the Kauravas toward the preceptor, Arjuna came up behind them. While Bhima was engaged with Duryodhan and his brothers, and Drishtadyumna was held by Ashvatthama, Arjuna sent his gold-wing arrows at Drona by the thousands. A mighty battle ensued between teacher and pupil that astonished the onlookers. They appeared like two dancers on a stage, exhibiting their most wonderful motions. Arrows flew through the sky like flocks of swans. Meeting in the heavens, the shafts exploded in showers of sparks and fire. Drona invoked every celestial weapon he knew, but as soon as they issued from his bow, Arjuna destroyed them. Drona smiled and applauded his prowess. In the sky, Siddhas and Gandharvas watched in wonder and praised both warriors. They could not perceive any difference between them as they stood releasing their weapons without pause. Neither could gain an advantage over the other. The gods considered the fight to be as if Rudra had divided himself into two and waged war against himself. "These two are neither humans nor celestials," they declared. "This is a battle of Brahma energy, which transcends all earthly powers. If they desired, these warriors could destroy the universe." While Arjuna and Drona fought, Drishtadyumna advanced steadily toward them, intent on killing Drona. He was followed by the twins, who were met by Kritavarma and Kripa. The heroes contended while the armies fought savagely around them. Satyaki, following Arjuna's path, came upon Duryodhan. Long ago in Hastinapur, when Satyaki had come to Drona's school, they had been friends. And even though Satyaki had become Arjuna's disciple, he had maintained his relationship with Duryodhan. The two men gazed at one another across the field, remembering their youthful sports together. Duryodhan called out, "Ho there, dear friend! How cursed is the duty of Kshatriyas! Fie upon might and the desire for wealth! O foremost of the Sinis race, in the days of our childhood you were more dear to me than life itself. Alas, all those days of friendship become nothing on a battlefield. Impelled by rage and covetousness, we stand here bent on each other's death. Alas, where have the carefree days of our youth gone? Satyaki lowered his bow and called back, that he must fight even with his preceptor has always been a Kshatriya's duty. O king, do not hesitate. If you love me, then slay me without delay. By doing so, you will launch me into the regions of righteousness. Display your full prowess. I no longer wish to witness my friend's slaughter. Tears fell from Satyaki's eyes as he spoke. He knew the days of friendship he had enjoyed with the Pandavas and Kauravas were gone. Their friendly fights of the past were now in earnest. Bending his bow, he shot a series of long shafts at Duryodhan, who immediately replied with his own arrows. The two men pierced one another repeatedly and roared in anger. A battle resembling that between Arjuna and Drona developed. The sky was filled with arrows as both warriors invoked their celestial weapons. Gradually, Satyaki prevailed over the Kaurava, and Karna came to Duryodhan's rescue. Assisted by Karna, the king pulled clear of Satyaki, his body lacerated by arrows. Drona continued to destroy the Pandava army as if appointed by death for their destruction. The oppressed troops' screams filled the air as he assailed them with countless blazing shafts. Witnessing Drona's power, Yudhisthira felt he could never become victorious. He met Arjuna and Bhima and revealed his anxiety. It seems that Drona will consume us. No one can check that mighty hero. Krishna replied, "What you say is true, O king. Drona cannot be checked as long as he stands with his weapons raised. But if he lowers them, he can be slain. I think if he hears that his son has been killed, he will lose all heart for the fight. Tell him that Ashvatthama is dead. Then he will lower his bow, and we will kill him." Arjuna was shocked. "I cannot accept this, O Madhav." But Bhima, upon hearing Krishna's words, immediately broke away. He raced into a nearby Kaurava elephant division. At its head rode Indravarma, the Malva ruler. Bhima knew his elephant was named Ashvatthama. Whirling his iron mace, the Pandava smashed the beast and slew it and its rider together. He then rushed over to Drona and bellowed out, "Ashvatthama is slain! Ashvatthama is slain!" But he knew it was Krishna's instruction, so he called out again and again, telling Drona that Ashvatthama was dead. Hearing Bhima's words, Drona stopped fighting. His limbs seemed to dissolve like sand and water. However, recalling his son's prowess, he decided it could not be true. Bhima was known to be capricious. It would not be beyond him to speak an untruth, in anger or in jest. Drona rallied himself and resumed his assault on the Pandavas. Jistadumna had reached him, and they had begun to fight again. Holding off Jistadumna's attack, the Kuru general continued annihilating the Pandava forces. He invoked the terrible Brahma weapon. Warriors fell to the earth like trees uprooted in a tempest. Heads and arms flew about as Drona's arrows fell on his enemies. In a short time, he had killed 10,000 chariot fighters before Yudhisthira's eyes, even while Jistadumna assailed him with all his strength. Drona stood on the battlefield like a blazing fire without a single curl of smoke. As Drona surveyed his ravaged foes, there suddenly appeared in the sky above him a group of rishis headed by Agni. His own father, Bharadvaj, along with Vasishta, Vishramrita, Gotama, Kashyapa, and many other celestial sages, stood in the sky in subtle forms. They addressed Drona in a single voice that only he could hear. "You are fighting unfairly, O Drona, using celestial weapons against lesser warriors. It is now time for you to die. Cast away your weapons. You are a learned Brahmin, and such cruelty does not become you. By employing the Brahma weapon to kill ordinary men, you have earned disrepute. Stop these sinful acts and stop fighting. Your days are now at an end." Drona looked around him. Justiduminus was still near him, roaring out his challenge. Perhaps the time for the prophecy's fulfillment had arrived. Jonah's arms fell to his side. He could not continue. Bema's words still troubled him, and the sage's speech pained him even more. Could Ashvatthama actually be dead? Who could he ask and be sure to receive the truth? Seeing Yudhisthira not far away, the Kuru general went toward him. He was the one to ask. Yudhisthira would speak no lie. Krishna saw Drona coming toward Yudhisthira and said, "Save us from Drona, O king. If he fights for even a half day more, your army will be finished. Under the circumstances, falsehood is better than truth. Speaking falsehood in order to preserve life is not a sin." Krishna cited a scriptural passage that sanctioned lying under certain circumstances, including times when life was endangered. Yudhisthira reflected on Krishna's words, and he could not ignore them. He had never in his life spoken an ambiguity. The thought of a lie was difficult to face. Yet if Drona was not checked, his forces would be defeated. The Pandava remembered Drona's own prophetic statement at the beginning of the war, that he would be overpowered at a time when he heard something disagreeable from a creditable source. Reluctantly, Yudhisthira agreed to Krishna's suggestion. As the Kuru preceptor approached him, he gave him the false news. "Ashvatthama is dead," he called out, adding inaudibly at the end, "the elephant," as he could not tell an utter untruth under any circumstance. Until that time, Yudhisthira's horses seemed to move across the field without touching the earth. After he lied to Drona, his horses descended to the earth. The sages looking on wondered why that was so. Some said that Yudhisthira's lie had been the cause, while others argued that his reluctance to obey Krishna's order was the reason. As soon as Yudhisthira spoke, Jonah felt his heart sink into fathomless grief. His agony was compounded by the sage's words, which made him feel like he had offended the Pandavas. Distracted by sorrow, he moved away from Yudhisthira with his weapons lowered. Justiduminus attacked. Drona was struck all over, but he did not resist. He was plunged into despair. Justiduminus attacked him with even more force, and the old Kuru chief, incited to anger, finally raised his bow to fight back. Displaying his incomparable lightness of hand, he cut down all of Justiduminus's arrows. He chanted mantras, invoking celestial weapons to destroy Justiduminus, but they no longer appeared at his command. Marveling, he fired volleys of ordinary arrows at his foe. Suddenly, he saw his stock of shafts, inexhaustible for the last 15 days, was empty. Despondent, Jonah decided to give up his life. He dropped his bow and repeatedly cried out his son's name. Looking over at the other Kurus, he called out, "O Duryodhan, O Karna, O Kripa, fight with all your power. I will now lay aside my weapons." Drona sat down in his chariot and assumed a meditative posture. With his eyes half closed and arms stretched out, he fixed his mind on Lord Vishnu. As he entered into trance, he intoned the sacred syllable Om. The celestial sages, still stationed in the heavens, saw Drona leave his mortal frame and ascend toward the higher regions. It seemed to them as if another sun was rising in the sky as the Brahman rose upwards. Justiduminus, unaware that Drona had already departed, saw his chance. Taking up a razor-edged saber, he jumped down from his chariot and ran toward the Kuru preceptor. All the warriors witnessing this called to him to stop, but he was not deterred. Amid cries of "Alas!" and "Fy!", he jumped onto Drona's chariot, and with the sword held high, grabbing hold of Drona's knotted hair, he dragged him, and with a great sweep of his saber, severed his head. He then threw the head to the Kauravas and roared in joy, whirling his blood-soaked sword in the air. Arjuna had been shouting at Justiduminus to capture Drona and bring him alive to Yudhisthira. He was mortified by Justiduminus's viciousness. His heart melted with sorrow at the cruel killing of his beloved teacher. Bhima, however, cheered and ran over to joyfully embrace Drishtadyumna. Yudhisthira was afflicted by different emotions. Overjoyed that the hostilities would soon end, he was nevertheless full of misgivings that Drona's death had been brought about by deceit. Like Arjuna, he was also saddened to see Drishtadyumna mercilessly butcher his preceptor. The Kauravas were struck by grief and fear. Their all-conquering general was dead. Unable to believe it, they fled. Duryodhan, Karna, Shakuni, and the Kuru chiefs were overwhelmed by sorrow. They ran along with their troops. As they rushed from the cheering Pandava forces, they encountered Ashvatthama moving in the opposite direction, like an alligator swimming against a river's current. Surprised to see the Kauravas retreating, he stopped Duryodhan and asked, "Why do I see our army flying, O king? Where are you and all of our other heroes running away? Surely some unthinkable calamity has befallen us." Duryodhan could not tell Ashvatthama the news. He looked down and said nothing. Kripa came up to his side, and Duryodhan said, "O son of Saradvata, tell Ashvatthama why we are fleeing." With tears flowing down his face, Kripa said, "With that foremost of men, Drona, at our head, we have waged a great battle with the Panchalas, during which he has slain not less than 50,000 of their number. Penetrating into the Pandava ranks, your father scorched our enemies like the destroyer himself. None could stand before him. Therefore the Pandavas decided upon unfair means to check your father. Informing him that you had been slain, O child, they deprived him of his senses and power. Drishtadyumna, when he saw him anxious and desisting from the fight, flew at him with sword held high. Even as the preceptor sat in mystic meditation, and as many warriors shouted at him to stop, Drupada's son lopped off his head. Thus did your father suffer death at the hands of a heartless warrior. This is why our troops are fleeing." Ashvatthama cried out. His bow dropped from his hand, and he fell to his knees. Insensible with rage, he shook like a tree in a tempest. His body burned, and he knelt with his head between his knees for a few moments. Gradually regaining his composure, he stood up and said, "O Duryodhan, how have the so-called virtuous Pandavas committed such an act? Today they will reap the consequences. Disregarding me, Drishtadyumna has committed a heinous deed. I swear by truth that the earth will soon drink his blood, as well as that of Dharma's son. If I do not slay every last one of the Panchalas, I will not drag on my burdensome existence any longer. By any means, fair or foul, I will bring about the end of Drishtadyumna and his followers." Ashvatthama's face glowed as he spat out the words, "Turn, O heroes, and fight our enemies. I will charge at your head and annihilate any who come before me. Today you will see me discharging fearful weapons equal to those of Rudra or Vishnu. I have in my possession the Narayan weapon, which my father gave me, which was given to him by Lord Shiva. He was told by that unfailing God that the weapon will destroy any at whom it's directed. I will use it today to crush the entire Pandava army. It can only be discharged once, and I have saved it for such a moment of desperation. Now the world will see its power." Ashvatthama roared repeatedly, inspiring new life into the Kauravas. They cheered him and rallied the retreating troops. To the beating of drums and the blast of thousands of conch shells, the Kaurava army turned back toward the Pandavas.